behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bolin.
Ben, today I've got to make just one quick little note here before we go on too much farther.
All right.
I know we just started, but I was thinking about one thing that we needed to mention in the Dale episodes that we did.
Uh-huh,
and
yeah.
And we forgot to. It's kind of like one more thing, I guess, in another episode. But I forgot to mention completely that the Dale was at one point featured on The Price is Right.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I guess. And I can't find any concrete evidence for this, but anecdotally, I'm finding this here and there on the web. And it could be that it was one of the prototype cars, the Revette.
Yeah.
I've seen it mentioned that maybe the Revette was the one, but it was featured as a showcase showdown vehicle on The Price is Right at one point. And someone did not win it, obviously, because, you know, there would have been, you know, hell to pay for the studios because the thing didn't run.
Yeah, you could sit in it and that's about it.
But, I mean, I thought that was so fascinating, like this part of history that, you know, after all we've told you about the Dale and, you know, the scam that it was, that it was somehow featured on The Price is Right. Not only that, it was, you know, on the showroom floor of the Los Angeles Auto Show. They really got this thing into places where it really shouldn't have been. You know, because it had no merit, really.
Brilliant marketing.
Yeah, it definitely was. So I thought we'd just clear that up before we get into our topic today, which is flood-damaged cars.
Yes, yeah, this would be filed under, and now for something totally different. Ladies and gentlemen, as we know, flood-damaged cars, at least in the United States, become a big issue when there are massive floods. And in the past few years, like if just thinking back over the last decade, there have been quite a few devastating losses to property. Specifically, Scott, I'm thinking of Hurricane Katrina, because if I can do a little personal aside, you know, I told you long time ago, I was working for this insurance company adjuster service. So people call me when something terrible happened and I would send out an adjuster.
Sure.
I worked there during Hurricane Katrina. So amid all of the thousands of calls related to, you know, people in emergency situations when the police weren't answering or people when they had lost their homes for months and months afterwards, we would get people calling to either report a flooded car or calling to try to investigate the story of a car they were buying that was originally from this area, from New Orleans.
Oh, interesting. We're going to talk about that aspect as we get through this, too. So you actually took some of these calls from people that said, hey, what's the deal with this car? And here's the VIN number.
Right. Yeah. People, which wasn't my department for the record.
I just did it for the first time. I said VIN number.
Oh,
we're gonna do that a
like
few times.
ATM machine.
I sure hope no one catches us on that because, you know, I think I'll inadvertently say VIN number a few times through here. I'm going to try to just say VIN.
But, right. Vehicle identification.
So you were actually
number.
Taking some of these calls and people were trying to find out what's going on, right?
Right. Yeah. And the reason that this is so crucial is, of course, because for anyone who doesn't know, a flooded car is catastrophic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? You mentioned Katrina as one example, and that's a big example, obviously.
Right.
I mean, that happened in, what was it, late 2005, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I just took a quick look at stats here just in the U.S. So just based on U.S. Geography all the way from Alaska all the way down to Florida. And there were some floods in Alaska, by the way.
I believe it.
In the last 14 years from 13 years from 2001 to present. There have been 22 major floods in the United States alone. Now, that's major floods where there's massive property loss, you know, property damage, just all kinds of issues that go along with that, including flooded cars, entire lots full of vehicles that are flooded completely, new and used, of course, and, of course, just people driving into the problem, you know, or just being in their garage and, you know, the things get ruined. Things like that happen as well.
Right.
So we're going to give you some tips. Now, these are just, you know, they can be from heavy rains. It could be from tropical storms. It could be from hurricanes. That's kind of the extreme example.
Right.
But, they're often difficult to spot. I mean, and the thing is, floods can happen anywhere. As I mentioned, you know, you wouldn't think of Alaska as having floods, but they do sometimes. Mm. Florida, you would think, sure, that happens sometimes, you know, along the coastal regions, you know, Louisiana.
Right.
Even into parts of Texas and, you know, up the East Coast, but you don't necessarily think of inland having problems, but some of the major rivers will overflow the banks, and then you've got issues there.
Right, like North Dakota has had some huge floods before.
Sure. I mean, look anywhere in the Midwest. Indiana has major flooding sometimes because it's low flatland, and whenever you get a significant amount of rain, this happens, and then you've got to be on the lookout as a consumer, you know, even years later, for vehicles that are kind of coming back as flood vehicles or vehicles that have been shipped off from that region to another region.
Right, yeah.
Which is a nice little trick they like to play on you
sure.
To, you know, somehow pass off these flood-damaged cars or lightly flood-damaged cars.
Gently washed.
Yeah, gently washed. That's a good, gently washed by the Mississippi River.
Right. So, what we'd like to do in this episode is just keep it short and simple. Luckily, our parent website, howstuffworks.com, has a handy list here of 10 ways to spot a flood damaged car. And what you and I are going to do today is walk through this, with some extra tips. With maybe a couple of, but wait, there's more.
Yeah, and a few tips just to begin with. So before we jump into this top 10 list, let's do this real quick here. I just want to mention a few things. Now, flood damaged cars are supposed to be destroyed. They're supposed to be completely classified as completely total
loss.
Yeah, total loss, completely, you know, destroyed. And the problem is some of them end up on used car lots.
Right.
And we know that this happens occasionally. It's, you know, unscrupulous. You know, used car dealers that pass off a vehicle that was a salvage title, you know, from a flood or whatever, as a new to you used vehicle.
Right.
They can't pass it off as brand new. I think manufacturers still are genuine about it, and they do destroy the vehicles. Now, not all the problems are immediately apparent with a flood damaged car. So you're going to look at things like corrosion or deep corrosion,
you know,
which sometimes won't pop up until much, much later, like even a couple of years down the road when, you know, you see some bubbling below the paint, things like that.
Right.
But, you know, body panels, electrical components, things like that are all damaged along, you know, with this whole flood. Anytime the water rises up above a certain level, your vehicle's going to sustain some damage, you know, whether it's, you know, the foam backing in the seats or the carpet or whatever it happens to be. And we'll get to a lot of these in this, but the key part of this whole thing is you got to know the signs. You got to know what to look for in order to avoid buying one of these cars either at auction
right.
or at a used car dealer or from an individual. You got to really be wary about what you're purchasing.
Because not every state has a lemon law that will work to your advantage.
Exactly right. And, you know, one of the first tips that they mention in this list as we jump into it here is a VIN check.
Yep.
And the VIN check is really, really important. And one place that you can go is the National Insurance Crime Bureau, or NICB.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you, of course, check the VIN number that way. Or I did it again, the VIN that way.
Don't beat yourself up.
I'm going to do it occasionally. I apologize. But it's usually, you know, well, you can find the VIN in a couple of different places on the vehicle.
Right.
And they'll check through the database and just see if it was ever declared as a salvage vehicle, which means, you know, it should have been too damaged to be worth repairing.
Right.
Completely totaled. But for whatever reason, it ended up on this dealer's lot or, you know, purchasing it from somebody
right.
along the way. Now, you can't just rely on that one source, though. You've also got to go to places like, I mean, you can go to Carfax, you can go to AutoCheck, which is an Experian company. They do similar things for damage, not only that, but frame damage and,
yep.
you know, body damage, things like that. But any kind of vehicle history report that you can get is worthwhile. And you can also consider going to the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System, which is a long place to go. National Motor Vehicle Title Information System. They will be able to give you a complete rundown on what that vehicle's gone through in its past.
And if you are, let's go ahead and hop at the list here. If you are doing one of the first steps, number 10, if you are being a smart shopper, then that means you're going to be talking to a used car dealer who already has some of this information for you.
Mm-hmm.
Any reputable car dealer will be able to provide you the history of the vehicle you are considering purchasing. And go to established used car dealers. Luckily, the internet is our friend in this day and age. You can check what other people are saying online. Because a good used car guy or girl or good used car company that's been in the business for a while is not going to put their own reputation at risk by trying to sell a couple of gently washed lemons.
Yeah, fantastic point, Ben, because they've been in business a long time. They're not going to, take the hit for, you know, selling one bad vehicle. You know, because it's just not worth it to them. Their margin isn't so extreme that, you know, they're going to be able to sell that one car to you and retire and run out of the state and be done with it. You know, a lot of these I guess fly-by-night used car dealers
right.
can do something like that in that they open up an entire lot, they sell a bunch of vehicles that have bogus titles, salvage titles, whatever, and then they're on to the next city.
Like
and
a traveling carnival.
Exactly. They change the names, they change, you know, a few of the people in the management or whatever, and they're on to the next city doing the same scam again. And it doesn't happen all that often, but when it does, you hear about it. So we catch things like this in the news, you know, sometimes here and there. It's, you know, sometimes it's one car, sometimes it's the whole lot of cars that are bad.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. This one bit of a bone I have to pick with this list already. They say, with any dealer, ask if the car you're eyeing has been damaged by floods. Get the answer in writing. Anything less than firm no or any hesitation to commit to writing is a cause for concern. I would say that that's cause to walk out.
Yeah. And if you outright say, is this a flood damaged car? And they hesitate before they say, or they kind of, hem and haw around the answer and won't give you a direct answer.
Hasta la vista.
I would say so too, because, you know, you can do some digging still and, you know, find out even if you look at the title itself, you can ask to look at the title.
Right.
And it's supposed to have a flood or a salvage stamp placed on it, but that's not law in every state, I believe.
True.
So, you know, you're going to have some issues there, like whether it's, you know, you may think it's clear because that's what you learned when you lived here in Georgia, but now you're over in Wyoming or wherever,
yeah,
and you'll find out that that's not the case, and you think you're buying a clean vehicle, but you're definitely not. So there's a lot to be said about being a smart shopper.
Right, and speaking of being a smart shopper, this next one is kind of related to one of our favorite urban legends, which is the sniff test. So you see a car, and let's say, I don't know, Scott, let's say it's a 2006 BMW.
Okay.
Okay. 40,000 miles, barely driven.
Okay.
All right. And it's got a super low price. It's like $2,000.
Wow. Not bad.
Yeah. But there's a smell.
So why so cheap?
Right. This takes us to the sniff test. The urban legend to which we're referring right now is the old legend about someone dying in a car and you can't get the smell out. But this is a little bit different, right, Scott?
Yeah. This one has to do with, you know, mold and mildew and things like that growing in the seats, under the carpets, anywhere that, you know, the moisture has been allowed to collect and gather and build mold or mildew and decay in some way. You know,
yeah, and decay dealers can't find this.
Exactly. And, you know, there could be silt and other things that, you know, it could be organic materials that were washed in the car, like grass or things like that, that had ended up in the vehicle or on the vehicle that then decayed. And that's causing the smell. Now, Ben, I got to tell you something, though. Every rental car that I've ever been in from the state of Florida has smelled moldy, mildewy, like musty smelling every single time when I open the doors. And I think it's just high humidity, lots of heat. Of course, it's very, very hot down there.
Nothing.
And when the cars are closed up and then you get inside, there's this, I mean, I'll tell you, every single vehicle that without fail, every one of them has a moldy, mildewy, musty smell to them. And I think it's, you know, maybe people are taking them to the beach and getting in with wet clothes.
That could happen.
The general humidity in the air, the atmospheric humidity. It could also be that, you know, they're drying swimsuits in the back. You know, the kids' swimsuits are drying as they're driving to the airport to get out of town.
That is gross.
All kinds of stuff. I mean, I just think that there's, you know, or it could be scuba gear. Or it could be anything like that.
Sure, yeah.
But every single vehicle in the state of Florida smells like mold and mildew to me.
Rental
when I get
vehicle.
The rental vehicle. And you're talking about a brand new car. So
right.
This kind of throws a wrench in this one. It's a little bit difficult to determine in every case.
So one thing they say here is that if you smell the mold immediately, you know, you open the door, you smell the mold immediately, then there's probably, they're saying a flood damaged car, but it could just be a really bad spill that was never cleaned. But if it's on the showroom floor, I think that's their point, right? If it's on the showroom floor already, they've tried to clean it and they haven't gotten the smell out.
That's a good point, because we're talking about a car that's supposed to be prepped for somebody else to buy it. And it's not like, you know, one person just rented it, they got out, and the next person gets in. And they haven't really had a chance to give it a full, you know, thorough go over, I guess.
Yeah. And if you're in doubt, you can try what I am dubbing, the Scott Benjamin Florida parking lot test, which is, you get into the car, you roll up the window, and you close the door just for a second, because if it is flood damage, you will quickly be able to detect the mold.
And there's probably a big difference. I'm sure that a car that is completely saturated and the carpets are moldy and everything, I'm sure that it is so overpowering. It's probably more than what I experienced when I jump into a rental car, you know, and maybe had wet seats at some point.
I wonder if reupholstering would clean the smell, you know, like just totally gutting the interior.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, it depends on where the damage is. But
I'm skeptical.
I am too, because it would creep up into, you know, it it wicks up. The capillary capillary action draws it up into the panels and things like that, because there's cardboard on doors, you know, the door panels.
Right.
That stuff saturates as well. It would be an extensive, extensive job.
Oh, and real quick, just for anybody who happens to be wondering, the capillary action thing that we're talking about here is if you take a, like if you take a piece of paper or something, and you dip the corner of it into a cup of water, then the water will creep up due to capillary action.
Yeah, it'll draw it up into the up into the material that you dip into the water. So, you know what? One good tip here. There's a tip at the end of this one here that I think we should share as we go along the way here.
Yeah.
The tip is that you can try this to just to see, because like the rest of the car may appear clean, because you know detailers do a great job of cleaning up this stuff. You know,
right.
Used car dealers or whatever, they have people that specialize in making cars look brand new again. So, you know, you may be fooled in a lot of cases, but one way to sniff out, you know, the difference between a good job and a bad job would be if you pull the seatbelts all the way out to the very, very end. And a lot of detailers will forget about that bit, that, you know, at the very end of the seatbelt, you may find mold, mildew, dirt, you know, whatever it happens to be that, you know, with the flood had caused to enter the vehicle and then get and collect in that area, because
right.
It's kind of like a big spooled up area down there. And a lot of detailers will forget to clean that part of the seatbelt. So that's maybe one way you can, find out if there was something kind of hinky going on there.
Yeah. I don't want to spend too much time on number eight, because I feel this is kind of common sense.
Yeah.
Feel your way around. Oh, surprise. Things feel wet. Then maybe the car has been exposed to moisture.
Obviously, this is a recent flood-damaged vehicle that we're talking about here. Now, I think that, you know, the standing water in a vehicle could hang around for a while, really.
Right. The best point's the trunk, though.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
A lot of people miss that.
Yeah, and you're talking about the spare tire, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So open it up. Open the trunk beneath the panel. You know, like most cars probably have the spare tire in a recessed area beneath a panel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So open up that panel, and that's where you can see some moisture damage. I have a hard time picturing buying a car, opening up that panel, and finding a puddle.
Yeah, me too. That seems like you drove it right from the flood straight to the dealership, and you're trying to sell it today.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or within a week or something like that.
I hope that doesn't actually happen.
I don't either. I mean, but, you know, the thing is that you can spot different clues that may indicate that had happened. And that's what the next tip is, you know, is spotting corrosion clues.
Now, this is one of the best ones.
It's a little bit tough. I mean, because you have to know what you're looking for. You have to look at you know, things that are slowly being eaten away by time, I guess, really. And, you know, the water, of course.
Right.
But sometimes it's visible, sometimes it's not so easily visible. So you got to really, really look. And, you know, the corrosion signs that are visible, you may see rust on screws or door hinges, things like that, or hood springs.
Yeah.
You know, items that are not coated, that are not painted, that may rust faster than areas that have been chromed or, you know, covered with other types of materials, like, you know, interior door panels that are covered with cloth. You know, you might not see the damage right away, but you're going to see it eventually.
What I think a great place to find some of this stuff is under the hood. So they have hood springs,
mm-hmm.
but also there are a few exposed bolts that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
The car battery, logically, in a flooded vehicle would have already been replaced, but you can check a lot of the connections around there, because they're exactly what you're describing. They're not painted. You know, rarely coated.
You have open copper contacts that are sometimes, easy indicators that,
right.
that, you know, there's something wrong here. You know, every single one of these is corroded and corroded badly. So you should be able to tell that way. Also, they do tell you that, you know, here's another good tip. If you take a mirror and you look below the seats. Now, this is one that a lot of people forget. I mean, you look below the car, and I've heard people using a hand mirror to check out, you know, kind of the frame and underneath and, you know, the sills and things. But I've never heard anybody really checking under the seats with a mirror. And the reason is that you can check for the springs and see if they're rusty under there. Now, there's no good reason for a spring seat to be rusty unless that, you know, it was sitting in water or you're in a high, high humidity area like in Florida, like we're talking about.
Sure.
That's maybe possible if, you know, salt water gets on it, you know, the salt water mist, but not likely. But if you're in Iowa and you find a relatively new vehicle with rusty seat springs, And you can kind of maybe think that, you know, there's something going on there as well.
And this is now that we're talking about examining interiors, this is a great segue to number six, which is faulty fabrics. This is another fairly obvious one. Where did all those stains come from?
Yeah, this is again, this could be tough, I suppose, if you get the wrong used vehicle, because
right, if they reupholster.
Well, yeah, I guess if somebody's just a sloppy person, you know, if you've got stained seats, you know, they've got a milkshake stain on the passenger seat.
Yeah, and, chronic milkshake drinker.
Yeah. Coffee stains that are in the headliner because, you know, they've opened up the coffee cup and it kind of sprayed all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, what if it's a little trickier though? What if the interior looks legit, but let's say the back bench has a slightly different shade of blue.
Ah, see, that's a great indicator because someone has swapped out some of the seats and not all of them. And that happens because, you know, as you find if the quality of the carpet doesn't match the quality of the seats, you may say, well, when did you replace the carpet? And then they'll tell you and you'll say, well, why did you replace the carpet? You know, you can kind of dig a little deeper with all of these. Mm-hmm. Now, so fabrics doesn't just mean the seats. It means the carpets as well. The headliner, it could mean, the door side fabrics, you know, if there's something in there. You can just find out, you know, again, if they match, if they don't match, you can check for seams that don't line up because from the manufacturer, those seams are going to line up unless you've got some really off brand manufacturer, like maybe a Yugo or something where they don't particularly care about that type of thing. Also, you know, you can kind of look around for loose carpet. You know, you can check, to see if it's not secured the way it would have been from the factory.
And we're not talking about loose in the ceiling, because, you know, a lot of cars that have been driven for a while by smokers, especially if they had carpeted tops, mm-hmm. then the fabric starts to drape and it gets a pretty nasty smell.
Yeah. What a pain that is, too.
But that's not a flood.
Yeah, that's a different.
It's a shame, though, still.
Different issue, and that's tough to fix without replacing the whole thing. I mean, you can't just adhere that stuff back up that
you
easily.
You can't just, like, stretch it and staple it.
Ben, I've seen everything. I've seen people staple them. I've seen them try to glue it with, like that JB Weld stuff, you know, putty. All kinds of horrible ways.
It's ruined so many nice cars.
It definitely has. You've got to go get that professionally redone.
Right, yeah.
If you're not confident about doing it yourself, so, like with the right adhesives and the right materials.
Right. So when we're talking about loose carpet, we're not specifically talking about that problem.
No, we're talking about that, and we're talking about age and color and, you know, all that. I mean, what's the good explanation for a relatively new vehicle? I'm sorry. Not a relatively new vehicle, an older vehicle with a relatively new interior.
Oh.
Like, why after 10 years did you feel you had to replace the entire interior of this car?
I was on that show with Exhibit. That would be the only guess.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Well, it's true, though. That's a really good question because, you know, the majority of aftermarket cosmetic things people do to their car are exterior. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
That's
having
true.
A new interior just for the giggles is not
unless
normal.
You're talking about a full-on custom deal like what you're talking about, the Exhibit show, as you mentioned. You
right, know, yeah. If it's a show vehicle, sure.
If someone's just pimped your ride or something, you know.
That's the name of it.
That's different, yeah. I guess another indicator would be if there's a 48-inch television in the back seat.
Brings us to number five on our list.
Very clever, Ben. Yeah, it's a test drive is a critical part of this whole thing in spotting a flood damaged vehicle. Now, I can read you this short little bit here, which is pretty important, I think.
Yeah, lay it on me.
It says a compromised electrical system is a critical and potentially life-threatening hazard inherent in cars exposed to high waters for extended periods of time. You want to test drive the car extensively to ensure all electrical components are operational. This is so important, Ben. I mean, they say it's a life-threatening hazard, and I know that sounds overstated. It's not.
Yeah, it is not, especially when we consider how many cars increasingly rely on electric components. So, mm-hmm. So we're not talking, you know, the days of it just being the AC and the radio are long gone.
No, you're talking about your ECU going out someday.
Exactly. You we're talking about rear view cameras not working.
And, you know, when these things fail, the problem is that, you know, a lot of times the backup isn't all that great. You know, you do lose power steering, but let's say you're on a twisty mountain road or whatever.
Right.
That, I don't know if that's a good example or not. That's kind of silly. It seems like there's better examples that will tell you that, you know, anytime you have an electrical failure in a car, my mom was driving a car one time, not a flood damaged car, but the power just shut off on the car. I mean, like this is like the late 80s.
That would make me think of Close Encounters of the Third
Kind. And her brakes worked, but it wasn't power brakes. And she nearly went into a ditch. Didn't go into a ditch, but I mean, the steering locks up.
Right.
Cause, you know, you try to turn and it locks because it's almost as if you're in, you know, park or something, like the ignition's off.
Yeah.
So the steering locks and your brakes don't really work all that well. Things like that can happen. And I mean, it's not so out of bounds to say that it could be a life threatening hazard if something like this happens. Now you can check for things like this. You can look for corrosion, like we mentioned on
right.
exposed cables and connections.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing you can do is you can look under the dash, and you don't have to look too far under the dash, but you can kind of wiggle the wires around a little bit. If they're brittle, if they're frayed, if they're decayed in any way.
Yeah. If there's corrosion flaking.
Yeah. The brittleness is one way to really, really spot it quickly, because they should be kind of soft and supple. The rubber should be still flexible. The cable underneath shouldn't feel kind of, there's a weird feeling to it, Ben. It's almost like it feels crunchy.
Right.
And it shouldn't feel crunchy like that. It should be, again, soft and flexible.
A little more supple.
Exactly. A little movable. And that's one thing that you can do.
You can also remember, use every possible electrical device in the vehicle. I know it sounds silly because we are basically saying use your cigarette lighter, your power outlet, or whatever they're called nowadays. Mm-hmm. Wow, I sounded really old on that one.
That's all right.
These are very simple things. So when you turn on the ignition, what sort of noise does it make? Right.
Yeah.
And when you turn on the ignition, when you rev the engine, and then let's say you have power windows and you also engage the power windows, do multiple things at once,
mm-hmm.
utilizing both the engine and the electrical system to see how they all work together.
That can also show you signs of a weak alternator and things
for
like
sure,
that too.
Yeah.
So there's other things that can be benefit. You can benefit in other ways, I guess, from doing that, Ben. But
mm-hmm.
Another thing, and this sounds awful funny, Ben, when you say it, but if you turn the ignition on and you detect or you smell or you see smoke from the dash.
Which is so, I wasn't even going to say it.
I mean, obviously that's a bad sign, but it happens. It really does happen.
Yeah, but who turns it on and says, well, it's just a little smoke.
Well, you know, someone could say like, well, that could be a leaky heater core. And, you know, it's just a little bit of steam coming up from that. So we know that that's an issue, but they're not telling you that also all the electrical system is frayed. You know,
yeah, here's another thing. And that's something, it all goes back to what we said earlier, which is caveat emptor, you know, let the buyer beware. Check the oil.
That's a fantastic point, Ben, because if you check the oil and the oil comes up on the dipstick as anything other than what we normally think of oil is looking like, either like a rich honey color, which would be great because it either means it's just been changed, or you've got a brand new engine or something like that. It's running very clean. Or it could be a dark brown, you know, which is not unusual for, you know, oil that's worn, you know, that's older, you know, all the way down to almost black. But if you pull it up and it looks like milky almost, think about like coffee that you've added cream to. If it looks like that, it looks like it has a milky or a milkshake type appearance to it, or is thick and sticky in any way. That's really, really a bad sign. That means that, you know, water has been able to creep into there. Or it could mean something else. It could mean that, you know, maybe you've got a bad head gasket on the car.
Right.
You know, the coolant is seeping in there. So that's another thing that can show you. So, you know, it's always a good idea to check the oil on a used vehicle. As funny as it seems, you know, you pull the dipstick out and, you know, look at it, inspect it as you would as if you were just checking the level.
Yeah.
But
be cool.
What you're doing is you're looking to see if there's any indicator of moisture there.
Right. You know, going on with these, I gotta say, Scott, for the next few, I'm just gonna go through them real quick because there's some other stuff we should get to that maybe is not on this list.
Sounds good.
All right. So number three, soggy signs, very close to everything else we've looked at. One of the best things is headlights and taillights, showing condensation.
Yeah, I kind of see this, kind of don't. I mean, there could be a crack in the lens, but.
Right.
I guess
it could have a seal, a weather seal could be messed up.
But if every taillight and every headlight, every lens area is fogged up or has standing water in it, that could be an issue. Cause then you're seeing that, you know, it's system wide, I guess.
If there's condensation on the dash.
Mm-hmm.
Where you would read the instrument panel.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, just leave.
That would be bad news.
All right. Another thing we talked about as well. Number two weighs in. Dirty details. This is called. Now, of course, this sounds like something obvious you would know even if you were, whether you were buying a flood car or whether you were unscrupulously selling one, you would vacuum, right?
Yes.
But not so fast because this stuff, the silt and the dirt and the grass can get everywhere. inside the glove compartment, under the glove compartment, under the spare tire, the dashboard, below seats.
Anywhere there's a tiny little ledge.
Yeah.
That's really it.
That's perfect.
And we mentioned the seatbelts, you know, pulling the seatbelt out to the full extension of it. You know,
that's
see
the best way.
To see what's there. And that's a really good way. But, but look, I mean, reach your hand and kind of curl your fingers back up underneath the wheel wells and see if there's anything there. Cause I think I mentioned a long, long time ago, Ben, there was a former boss of mine that went to buy a vehicle and he found he's finding worms and stuff on, you know, like dried up dead earthworms underneath the wheel wells. And, you know, and the guy explains it away as saying, oh, I think that was just some kids playing a trick on me. And he said, what? I don't think so. I'll see you later.
What sort of strange children?
That's the whole point. It's like he had no answer for him. And yeah, who's going to play a prank by tucking worms under the
worm gang?
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, what a silly thing to say. I mean, but he had nothing, you know, he just had to go with what he had. He was trying to sell the car, I guess.
So for number one on this list, I think this is something you should do every time you consider buying a car. Have a mechanic that you trust who either goes with you to the lot to look at the car or you're somehow able to work out a deal where you drive it to your guy and girl or whatever.
And we always say this, and I really wonder how many people ever follow this instruction. Now, I've done it a couple of times where I've taken it to somebody. A couple of times I've not done this as well. I'm guilty of not doing this because, you know, I feel like, well, I've inspected this thing on my own enough to feel comfortable with this purchase. But other times I have taken it to somebody to have them look at it. And that includes a full wheels off inspection of the thing. So they check everything.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's a much more thorough exam than you can give a vehicle sitting on a used car lot. I mean, they're able to check brake components. They can check. You know, to see if there is any silt or grass or anything that you need to be concerned about.
Right. Or if there's any body damage that got, covered up a little bit.
Sure. And they're not the ones trying to sell you the car. They're the ones who are just giving you an inspection. So they're going to give you their opinion, whether it's good or bad. They're going to say, I don't think you should buy this car, or let me just show you this and you can make your own determination.
Or the back end here is roughly 80% Bondo.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're trying to buy.
yeah, exactly. And that sometimes happens. You know, it looks like this, the back end of the car was sculpted out of Bondo. There's no metal at all.
So this is a very easy thing. This is something you should do anyway. Of course, it's one of those things that a lot of people, unfortunately, do not do when they buy a car. And my family, historically, if we're buying a vehicle from a private individual, then we always have it checked out pretty thoroughly. I think for most people, buying something from, you know, CarMax or a larger chain, I think a lot of people skip it.
Yeah, because they feel comfortable with it, because they've given it the inspection. They tell them what they've done. They actually, in a lot of those cases, you know, my wife has purchased a vehicle from CarMax. And they carefully go over everything with you. And if you have any questions, they're happy to talk with you and to take a look at it and have their mechanics look at it. And, you know, they've got people on site that do stuff like that maintain the vehicles that come in that, you know, kind of give them the inspection that make sure that everything's all right and replace parts that need to be replaced. So, you know, a lot of times you can feel comfortable with them doing that type of thing. If you don't, you know, take it somewhere and have it done. There's no shame in that. And they should be happy to let you take it for, you know, half an afternoon and check it out because they stand to make a sale.
And if they're not, then you don't need their business you don't need to give them any more business.
That's the way to say it.
So real quick, I wanted to quote our buddies, over at Car Talk, a show that you and I are big fans of. They had some statements about this that didn't make it to some of the things on our list. The first thing that they emphasize, their advice for flooded car, don't buy it. Never, ever, ever buy it.
Oh, yeah. If it says outright it's a salvage vehicle, it has a salvage title, you're looking at a lot of trouble with that vehicle down the road. I mean, it may not be immediately apparent, but it will crop up.
Right. And one of the big problems you could have is if any water gets into a cylinder, it can later form a hydro lock, which is just going to be nasty, and you already purchased a totaled car. It just took a while to die.
Sure.
And one of the things they say is they said that if the water got any further than the floor of the car, it's totaled. Take the insurance money, go on.
Oh my gosh.
And
that's not very deep.
Some people might say that's extreme. But I don't know. I kind of agree with them, maybe because it hasn't happened to me, because man, I'm so cheap that, you know, if my car did get involved in a flood situation, I would probably try to do everything I could to save it.
So even those deep, deep puddles that you, you're tempted to wade across because it may just go just a little bit above the bottom edge of your door. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Yeah. It's not worth it. So when we talked earlier, we said, that you should always check the background, the pedigree of your vehicle. Mm-hmm. But we didn't specifically mention Carfax as a free service that will check it. So you're not going to have to pay extra is the point we need to underline.
Yeah. Yeah. It's free. So why not use it?
You have really no excuse because it is a free service. Mm-hmm. So Scott, what else do you have?
Well, I've got just, I guess, three final words of advice, and that's about it, really. I mean, I guess the biggest one is just know the signs of flood damage to vehicles and you should be okay. I mean, that seems pretty obvious, but I mean, if you just study, like, you know, 10 things like we just mentioned, you know, if you can think about those things when you go to look at any used vehicle or new vehicle even, just keep those in the back of your mind. And if you see anything like this crop up, you know, if you spot silt underneath the wheel well arches, or if you find that when you open up or you pull up the seat belts and they're all dirty at the end, or a brand new interior on a 10-year-old car, you know, stuff like that, you know, why, you know, you should be asking the right questions. So if you know the signs, you should be all right. The second thing is just don't be afraid to ask direct questions of whoever you're going to buy this vehicle from the seller. You should be able to, you know, just outright ask them anything. You should say, right, you know, was this a flood damaged vehicle? You know, what's the story with the new interior? Why is that happening? I mean, because if you don't ask questions like this, you're going to be the one that's stuck with a bad car. I mean, it's not them. They've already made their money. They've signed off the title and it's all done for them.
Right.
I mean, I know there's court, you know, ways to back this up, I guess, but you know, just don't put yourself in that situation. Just walk away from the deal at that point. If it doesn't seem like, you know, things are quite right, it's probably because they aren't.
No, yeah.
And just use your gut instinct on it a lot of times. And, the last thing is, I guess, make sure that use all of the VIN checks that you can. Like you mentioned, you know, the, Carfax, right?
Yeah.
And then all the other ones that we mentioned at the head of the show. I think it was the National Insurance Crime Bureau and the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System. And what was the other one? AutoCheck, I think.
AutoCheck.
Another one.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of these sites out there that are available to help you. And all you have to have is, you know, the VIN. And type that information in, and you'll be able to find out all of the vehicle's history. And why not do it? I mean, you know, some of these are free. Some of them may have a nominal fee with them, but it may be worth it in the long run.
Yeah. What would you rather lose, an hour of your time or thousands of dollars?
And don't count on just one, because some things are hidden and some things don't show up. You know, they're not reported. So use more than one. Use two, three, four, maybe if you have to, just to double check and triple check. You know, that this vehicle is a safe purchase.
Speaking of two, three, and four, we have one last thing to do.
What's that?
We have to respond to some of this listener mail.
Sounds good.
Okay, so just a quick full disclosure to everybody. You already have responded to some of these emails, and I wanted to go ahead and put a couple of these on the air.
Oh, okay.
Here. So Brian H. writes to us regarding the infamous J reverse. So,
oh, you're talking about the fish hook turns,
yeah.
Or whatever, the burnouts that we were
talking
about.
Yeah, we got a lot of people writing back about that.
Yes, we did.
So Brian says the stunt, as you referred to, is actually performed in reverse to start with and is a shifted speed into a forward gear, sometimes referred to as a reverse curl. I've done this as a teen a couple of times with some old junker front wheel drive and rear wheel drive. Well, that's tough to say.
Yeah, it is.
Rear wheel drive.
Yep. Rural.
Rural juror. Go to an open area test track, parking lot, put car in reverse and gather as much speed as possible. Depending on the car, you can get 15 to 20 miles per hour in reverse, some are lower, of course. Slam the shifter in the drive, the car will shift and start spinning the tires, giving you the J mark on the pavement. Again, probably not great for the transmission, but doable.
Now, a lot of people wrote in with the exact same thing, Ben. And you know what? I was hung up on the idea that this had to be someone going in a forward gear and then shifting into reverse to make this happen. Because that's the way I remember the story. Now, this sounds to me like maybe either the person that told me or my memory has been clouded over the last, I don't know, 30 years since I've heard this. No. Let's say it's about 25 years ago when I heard about this. So, maybe he was telling me that, you know, you start in reverse and then jam it into a forward gear. And that seems to make sense that you could do that. There's a way to do that, but to go from forward gear to reverse gear, like we thought it was, you just can't do it. Now some people did write in also and say, oh, by the way, I did have a an old pickup truck where I shifted inadvertently from forward gear into reverse gear.
Right, yep.
And it did work. You know, it went into reverse, and it actually started to go backwards. And, you know, there was a terrible sound, and I thought, you know, I'd ruined the thing, but, you know, I started it back up, and everything was fine.
Yeah.
We got three or four, or maybe even five responses from people in various vehicles that said, you know, it was possible. I did it. It was something I didn't mean to do.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But it happened, right. And everything turned out okay. And another one was, well, I think there's one that there was severe damage to as well. One said, you know, that there was some trans damage after that, so I learned my lesson, or, you know, that won't happen again, or whatever, you know, something like that. But we got so many responses, Ben, about this, and saying that, yeah, you start rolling in reverse, go pretty fast, and then jam it into forward gear and continue to, like, you know, accelerate to go fast.
Right.
And that's where you get that J mark from.
Yeah, yeah. And so, the one part of the trick that takes the longest time to master is saving up to buy a new transmission.
Yeah, because not long after you do something like this, you're going to have some damage.
Yeah,
I mean, if you do it, you know, don't do it. We're not recommending it by any means, and I do recall that from the original story as well. That you know, this was extremely hard on the driveline of the vehicle, so it's not worth it.
All right, well, that's it for us today, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. We hoped we helped you avoid buying a flood-damaged car. It really is bad medicine. So go ahead and let us know about your experiences with flood-damaged cars. Hopefully not selling flood-damaged cars, because that would make you a villain.
A criminal.
We need that Law & Order sound cue at the end of this one. In the meantime, write to us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. We are CarStuffHSW on both of those. We have our own website, CarStuffShow.com. And you can always send us an email directly. We are
CarStuff@Discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.